Welcome to the Florida Roundup and Merry Christmas. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Hope you're enjoying your Christmas day. And as you kick back and relax on this holiday, take a listen for the hour as we take a look back at an extraordinary and difficult year around the state. COVID-19 has cost Florida billions of dollars and hundreds of thousands of jobs. The virus hit the state's biggest industry, tourism, very hard. This hour, we will look at the impact of COVID on the hospitality business, including restaurants, cruise ships, and the biggest tourism destination for visitors, Orlando.
But first, the collapse of tourism has a big impact on the state budget. Lawmakers will have to make some very tough decisions next year as they deal with an estimated $3 billion budget hole. We spoke with the state legislature's economist, Amy Baker. Amy, welcome to the Florida Roundup. Back in August, you estimated a 10% drop in state revenues for this fiscal year that ends in July. How are things looking now?
It's been doing a little bit better than we expected in August. There's a couple of reasons why that's occurring. I'm not sure it signals a big change in our longer term forecast as much as just some shifting that's going on right now.
Can you give us a sense of what some of those early shiftings have been?
We think a couple of things have happened. One we were expecting, which is as soon as people in Florida felt safer this summer to leave their houses and to go back out shopping and doing, you know, going back to work and doing different things, there was some what we call pent-up demand. For a long period of time, people didn't feel like they were able to make purchases they normally would, or those services in particular just weren't available to them, where it's haircuts, going and having their nails done, or a variety of other services that normally are a big part of our lives. During the worst of the pandemic, that wasn't true. Then a couple of things were induced by the fact that we have very low interest rates right now. So people that were in a place where they were able to purchase a new car, it became very attractive for them to do so because the interest rates were so low. And the same thing with houses. We saw that, again, for those that were able and had the means, those low interest rates probably help them make that decision, push them over the edge. So between the two things, a lot of pent-up demand was taking place over the summer. You wouldn't expect that to continue on. That was a one-time thing.
Where is the state revenue missing? What kinds of taxes are just not performing up to expectations?
For state tax purposes, the area that is still hurt the hardest and we think will be hurt the longest is in the tourism sector, or leisure and hospitality sector.
And so that is sales taxes and hotel taxes.
For our purposes, that's largely it. It also has some state spending in it. As Floridians go out to these different attractions or they go out to restaurants or other things like that, their money is also being captured in this category. So it's not just out-of-state tourists, but it's also that component of in-state activity too.
Amy, compare the revenue drop that the state is facing for this fiscal year because of the pandemic compared to the revenue drop that the state experienced during the worst of the years of the Great Recession.
Well, we've used that as a model. We've tried to look at what happened then to kind of help us shape what's happening now. But the nature of it is different. Florida had kind of a double whammy. We had the collapse of the housing market first, and then we entered in with the rest of the country to the Great Recession. So that all unfolded over a couple of years. It wasn't just the Great Recession. It was the housing bust first. So it was slow building before we hit the absolute worst of it. It took several years to get there. But what we saw during the pandemic, it was very sharp, very immediate. And you went from a very healthy, stable economy to basically shutting it down in late March.
As state lawmakers go back to work in March of 2021, I know the numbers will continue to change up through the budget process, but what kind of situation are they looking at in terms of overall state revenues that they will have to allocate compared to what they perhaps were expecting when they last met in Tallahassee back in February of 2020?
We have a couple of things that are going to come into play. In fact, we're going to be doing our new general revenue estimate a week from our conversation today. So a week from next Friday, we'll be taking another look at it. And I think what we've seen through all the conferences that we've been going through so far is for a lot of areas, the revenue sources are behaving pretty much like we expected to. You know, we've been fine-tuning the estimates, but they're not going to be any shocks from any of the things we've done so far.
But it's still down considerably compared to what they expected to have before the pandemic.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
And so with that in mind, what options do state lawmakers have to make up for that shortfall?
They have the same ones they always have available to them. Cutting the budget, that's always a big discussion. Trying to figure out what programs they can trim. Is there any programs that they can suspend either permanently or just over the short run? That's made a little more challenging by the fact that the Medicaid forecast is very high right now.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that. This is the federal and state partnership health program, Medicaid, that's expected to see a 16.5% increase in enrollment in Florida.
Yes, we have another segment of Florida's economy that are particularly tied to the leisure and hospitality industry, to those restaurants, those attractions, those bars, that they either are laid off or they have extremely reduced hours or they actually became unemployed as a result of the pandemic. So as have a big reliance on the employment and the hospitality and related industries, that group of people who were closer to lower income to begin with and the lower income to the extent that they could qualify for Medicaid have been pushed into Medicaid and other services of the state. So that's really changed our view of what the caseload will be in Medicaid.
About 25% of Medicaid spending in Florida comes from state revenues. That was expected to be about $8.5 billion. This increase in enrollment, what kind of financial impact is that going to make on the budget?
For next year, it is going to be a big dent, even relative to what we thought the summer. For this year, we're helped a little bit. As long as we're in a declared public health emergency, the federal government has increased the amount of money that they're shipping to Florida, their share of the Medicaid bill. And so we've been helped by that this year. It's different than what we originally envisioned, but it's manageable in terms of cost. But next year, that extra relief is not anticipated to be there. So the federal government share will go back to normal. Florida's share will increase, and we'll have to come up with the additional dollars.
Where are the areas of discretionary spending that lawmakers are going to have to get that sharp pencil out and really take a look at?
Well, that's always in the eye of the beholder.
yeah.
There's some areas that are probably more obvious than others. So like economic development is definitely discretionary. There's no federal ties on it. So you have more room in that area to look at changing how you fund it. Department of Corrections, there's, you know, only limited amount of federal requirements that relate to the care of prisoners. Or constitutional requirements that relate to the care of prisoners. But there's only so much room you have there. I mean, there's basic cost of taking care of people when they're in prison, and there's not a whole lot of savings that can be found there. So, same thing with education. In theory, we have a lot of room where we could make changes to how we fund education. But the reality is we believe in the importance as a state of Florida in education, and there's only so far we would be willing to go. So it's very small parts of the budget where you have complete flexibility and can probably touch without people worrying about what the immediate ramifications of it would be.
How would you characterize the level of difficulty in these financial decisions that lawmakers are going to face with this budget next year?
It's exceedingly painful for the members to go through this. Really, what we're banking on is that the vaccine will be widely distributed by sometime during the summer of 2021, so the upcoming summer. We're assuming that you return to normal very quickly thereafter. So it's hard calculus for members to make, very difficult. A lot of competing interests.
Amy Baker's official title is Coordinator of the Office of Economic and Demographic Research for the state of Florida. She's perhaps better known as the Chief Economist for the state legislature. Amy, thanks for your time today.
No problem.
Tourism numbers for Florida took a big nosedive when the pandemic first hit back in the spring. Most analysts say a full recovery for this key part of the state's economy is still at least a year away. I spoke about the challenges of 2020 and the plan for 2021 with Visit Florida CEO Dana Young. Hi, Dana. Thanks so much for being with us.
Good day. And I guess Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas. And some positive holiday news to begin with as we talk about how the pandemic has affected tourism here in Florida. Certainly, it's no surprise that state tourism numbers took a huge hit. How do you see the tourism picture unfolding for Florida as we head into next year?
Well, that's a great question, because clearly tourism has been disproportionately negatively impacted here in Florida by the pandemic. Tourism is our state's number one industry. And so when we got hit very, very hard. But we have been tracking the numbers and the data, and we have a lot of things going for us as a state. Number one, we're open. Thank you to Governor DeSantis for keeping our businesses open. And secondly, we're getting into the time of the year when our weather is better than just about any place on earth. And so we can offer people an amazing array of fantastic outdoor experiences that they can enjoy safely here in Florida. So the numbers are getting a little bit better, but we are not even close to being out of the woods yet.
Overseas visitors to Florida have ticked down, as you said, quite a bit. The governor wants the federal government to ease coronavirus travel restrictions here from both Europe and Brazil. Do you anticipate that making any kind of impact on your numbers? Should those restrictions be eased?
Well, we certainly want international visitors to come to Florida, to come back to Florida, because they stay longer and spend about twice as much per person as a domestic visitor. So they're very important to our tourism economy. We can only go up from where we are now, because our data shows that we've had about a 98-99% decrease in international travel.
What would you say to those who don't agree with this move by the governor? They just don't think it's safe to be encouraging international visitors to Florida. As you said, normally they'd flock here at this time of year, but this is, has just been a year unlike any other.
Well, we have such an amazing slate of safe outdoor experiences here in Florida, and our marketing has been focused on those experiences. You know, people have different comfort levels and they should do what they're comfortable with. But here in Florida, people can have a safe experience with their families, make wonderful memories, and enjoy this wonderful state that we are so fortunate to call home.
Now, some economists have forecast that travelers to Florida, mostly from other states in the U.S., that we could get back to the pre-pandemic numbers by 2022. So as we look ahead to 2021 and you anticipate a really slow rebound, what's the strategy at Visit Florida to get the state's tourism numbers on a more solid footing, you know, as we keep slogging through this pandemic and we await a wide rollout of a vaccine?
Well, you know, the projections are what the projections are. And at Visit Florida, we are out to beat those projections. And we see that as our charge and our mission is to, you know, do everything in our power to bring visitors back more quickly than the projections would suggest. So our marketing initially rolled out in August. We rolled out an in-state marketing campaign, which was something new for us. We typically don't market to Floridians, but we wanted to harness that pride that Floridians have and encourage them to get out and support local businesses and state businesses here in Florida. And then in October, we rolled out a domestic rebound campaign in the eastern U.S. So this would be drive markets within around 700 miles of Florida, which is a long way. But we found that people will travel further by car for a Florida vacation. So we've been marketing to these major cities in the eastern U.S. like Houston, Birmingham, Nashville, Atlanta, Charlotte, Philadelphia is probably the farthest north, and encouraging people to, if they're comfortable traveling, to come to Florida or at least put Florida at the top of their list.
The businesses across the state that rely on tourism, a big chunk of those did receive the PPP money, Federal Paycheck Protection Program funds. How vital is it at Visit Florida that Congress come to some sort of agreement on a new round of stimulus and relief for businesses, particularly the tourism-related businesses here in Florida that you work with?
Well, tourism pre-pandemic employed 1.5 million Floridians and brought $91 billion to our economy in 2019. So keeping these businesses afloat, and even more importantly, frankly, keeping these people employed is very, very important. So we are just hoping that we can do our part as Visit Florida and encourage people to come and spend money here in Florida. If Congress acts in a way that is helpful to the industry, then I know that it would be very much appreciated.
Now, speaking of getting more people to visit Florida, let me ask you about this new partnership that Visit Florida put together with an adventure tour company, Outbound Collective. They're encouraging minority and underrepresented groups to book Florida nature and adventure vacations, in particular, people of color, LGBTQ plus people, people with disabilities, and people of size. This is an interesting partnership. Tell us about it.
Well, Florida is known for our hospitality, and certainly there are certain segments of our population that have been underserved by the tourism industry over the years. And it's our goal as Visit Florida, and frankly, one of our most important goals, frankly, to make sure that everyone feels comfortable here in our great state. So we want everyone, no matter your color, no matter where you come from, your economic status, who you love, no matter what, we want everyone to know that they can have a fantastic vacation here in Florida and feel welcome.
Thank you so much, Dana Young. She's President CEO at Visit Florida. Thanks, Dana, for being with us.
Thank you.
Still ahead, restaurants and the cruise industry, how they're hoping to come out of the pandemic. You're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for listening on this Christmas Day. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
Well, have you avoided eating in a restaurant for most of this year? Concerns about the spread of the virus in bars and restaurants and the closure of many establishments for much of 2020 devastated Florida's restaurant industry. Thousands of businesses hit hard by the pandemic may never reopen again. And Florida's tourism-driven economy has also suffered because hotels have not been full in the pandemic. I spoke about it with Carol Dover, president and CEO of the Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. Hey, Carol, good to be with you. Thanks for appearing on the Florida Roundup.
Thank you for having me.
The National Restaurant Association is now saying 1 in 3 restaurants may never reopen next year. So it's right. been such a tough year for Florida with our heavy reliance on tourism. As you look back now at 2020, what has been the most challenging thing for your association throughout this whole ordeal?
Oh, you know, where do you start? Going all the way back to March when we were in a total shutdown, fighting for just outdoor seating, trying to figure out how to keep the public safe, but yet keep our businesses open, keep people employed. Then the devastation of, you know, watching the huge layoffs and furloughs, families that, you know, are hurting. But I have to say, I serve on both national organizations with the hotel industry and the restaurant association, and we're just so fortunate and grateful to have Governor Ron DeSantis as our governor here, because I hear horror stories like what's going on in California right now, and Michigan and New York and Chicago and Illinois. It's just crazy. We're just so blessed that you know, our governor has, you know, pretty much put a stake in the ground to stick with science, but yet find how to thread the needle of keeping our businesses open and allowing us to still operate, but yet stay safe.
Well, and certainly your goal is to keep businesses open. What would you say, though, to critics of that approach who are worried about the health and safety of your of wait staff and of patrons to restaurants and hotels? What's your response to the critics?
That there is absolutely no science that proves that this is happening because of restaurants and our hotels. You know, you cannot say since day one, which obviously I'm a huge supporter of my grocery store people and Walmart and Costco and Lowe's and Home Depot. Many of them are members of ours, but you can't continue to allow the thousands of people that go through those businesses every day, and yet we've been on limited rations on our side. But yet the CDC constantly wants to make it sound like it's our industry. And we take great offense to that. It is not the restaurant industry. In fact, there's probably never been a cleaner place to patronize today than the restaurant and the hotel industry.
Let me ask you as a follow-up about that, because when you go to a restaurant, it is different than going to the grocery store where in a lot of places, everybody will keep their masks on the entire time. When you go to eat in a restaurant, you have to take your mask off to eat. And so that seems to be why health officials like the CDC are saying this isn't as safe an activity to participate in. Of course, the problem becomes in a state whose economy is so dependent on tourism and people going out and people visiting and staying in hotels, restrictions on these industries have really taken a multi-billion-dollar bite out of Florida's economy. You do see a lot of people these days far more comfortable with going out to eat outside maybe than eating indoors. What's the strategy for next year for your association to keep encouraging that?
Again, one of the blessings we have is that it's Florida. So, you know, this time of the year, it's comfortable in South Florida to sit outside. North Florida can get a little chilly, but, you know, we're not like some of my colleagues are dealing with, you know, several feet of snow, and it's impossible to sit outside. I see outdoor dining becoming bigger than ever. But, you know, to the argument that when people get inside and they sit down at their table and they take their mask off, everybody is still social distancing. So, yes, you have to take your mask off to eat, but we're still honoring the 6 feet, and in some cases more, of social distancing. Science is still on our side.
Well, and when you say science is behind you, which scientific studies is your association relying on for the way that you are encouraging restaurants and hotels to operate?
The things we just discussed. Most all of our members are requiring masks until you get to your seat. We have social distancing implied. We have partitions between booths. We have expanded our outdoor seating. We have infiltrated dozens of different types of cleaning companies, from fogging companies that are used in hospitals and hotels. The list goes on and on of all of the things that we have implemented that have been approved, and we're abiding by those rules.
And let me ask you about turning the page into next year, because you have joined other business interests to put together a wish list for the governor and the state legislature. For, as just one example, making permanent an alcohol-to-go policy from restaurants that was first approved by executive order. This is something that you think would help restaurants next year get more on their feet. Is that right?
Correct. Absolutely. We've had this conversation prior to COVID, but I think COVID proved unfortunately tragic way, because we have argued in years past that you can go into the grocery store, go into the liquor store, you can buy your alcohol and take it to go. And people say, well, but, you know, we don't want to encourage drinking and driving. You can open up a bottle from your, or a can of beer or whatever, when you leave Publix, just as easy as you can when you leave a restaurant, except we've never been allowed. And so by allowing alcohol to go in establishments that chose to do it, then it helped with their bottom line revenue, of course, and helped to hire more people, keep the doors open, offer more for the customer. We have to properly seal it. It has to be labeled, sealed in a container. So we're doing it in a very responsible way, and maybe even more responsible than going to your traditional outlet and purchasing alcohol.
And let's talk for a brief minute about the other part of your association, lodging. The biggest concerns for hotel groups and hoteliers as we get through the rest of this pandemic. What's on your agenda there?
Well, unfortunately, right now we sit second to California with our hotel employees. We've lost about 336,000 hotel employees. And if you've been to Orlando lately, you know, it's just sad. There's the convention business. Orlando was built on theme parks and convention business. And though the theme parks are open, they're not open to the level in which we're used to. And the convention business is just very minimal. Our goal is to, once this vaccination is out there, is to get our airlines and travel going. International travel is huge for Orlando. And then trying to make people more comfortable having conventions, still maintaining safety standards.
Well, I want to thank you for your time as we look at the year that was and cast ahead to 2021. She's Carol Dover, President and CEO of the Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. Carol, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
Millions of people visit Florida on their way to taking a cruise, but the ships have been docked since March. Taylor Dalvin covers the industry for the Miami Herald. Taylor, welcome to the Florida Roundup. When do cruise companies expect to be back on the water with passengers?
So far, cruise companies have canceled passenger cruises through February of next year to start as soon as March 1st, 2021.
We've seen that date slip further and further into the future, haven't we?
Yeah, and it's, I mean, think about March 2021 is a year from when cruises were first canceled in March of this year. So first it was, we're canceling for 30 days, 60 days, you know, and now we're here. So it's really, really difficult to tell, especially now that we're seeing record COVID hospitalizations in the U.S.
So what are the protocols that the cruise ships are putting in place for when passengers do eventually come back?
At the end of October, the CDC published a 40-page memo laying out what they needed to see from the cruise companies in order to give them the green light to invite passengers back. So there's a lot in there. The first step they're requiring is that they mitigate current outbreaks among crew on these ships, because they're still full of crew members who are continue to get the virus. And so they want cruise companies to have PCR laboratory capability, testing capabilities on board. They want crew to be tested weekly for the virus using those lab tests, with reporting to the CDC. So that's kind of the first step. Looking forward, they're going to require the companies to do what they're calling mock cruises, or simulated cruises, where they'll have volunteers to give this a go.
There was a cruise to nowhere, so-called cruise to nowhere recently in Asia, I think it was, that got called back. And there was another cruise just a few weeks ago in the Caribbean as a test cruise that got called back because of an infection. But I want to reiterate what you talked about in terms of the cruise employees. These cruise ships, while no passengers over the last several months during the pandemic, are not empty. There's still many with cruise employees on board, and those employees are still susceptible to the infection. Is that right?
Yeah, I think when people think of canceled cruises, they think that these ships are tied to a buoy abandoned somewhere. That is not the case. These ships still have at least 100 crew members to keep the engines running, the lights on, and everyone fed and cared for. So there are still thousands of crew working on these ships all over the world as they come in and out of port every few days to refuel and restock. We are still seeing COVID infections among crew members during this pandemic. So that's something cruise companies are still working to mitigate. They're also, you know, replacing crew, trying to replace people who've been at sea for months, some more than a year, trying to get those people home and get people on board to replace them. And with that comes more risk. People have to be tested before they leave their home countries, quarantine on board. It's a big logistical challenge.
You are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. What are the economic stakes in Florida, the cruise capital of the world, in Miami and Port Everglades, especially in South Florida, but also increasingly Port Canaveral and the Space Coast?
Yeah, so outside of the thousands of employees that work in the cruise company offices on land, there's an entire economic ecosystem of people who support the industry. So at Port Miami, we're talking about people who have shuttle businesses to get passengers to and from the port, travel agents who book lodging for passengers and for crew, the longshoremen who work to get passenger bags onto the ship and actually port these enormous ships when they come in. So the list goes on and on of people in our community, residents of South Florida, who are without work every day that the industry remains paralyzed.
So what is the industry doing to attract back that cruising audience? Because I imagine former cruisers are going to be the first to decide to get on a boat when they can sail again.
You're exactly right. They're having a lot more luck booking people who've been on a cruise before and are familiar with how it works. They're offering deals, you know, reduced pricing to lure people back. And they're also really trying to get the word out about all the work they're doing to make cruises more safe and avoid having outbreaks and having their ships stranded like what we saw in the spring and summer.
When these ships sail again, they're going to be leaving from Florida and then returning to Florida. But in the meantime, they'll be sailing around the Caribbean and the Gulf of Mexico. What kind of questions do you have and do the cruise companies have about the state of the virus in the Caribbean?
If the restart of cruising in the U.S. is anything like we've seen it be in Italy and now in Singapore, these cruises will leave from Port Miami and not visit anywhere else. We'll just cruise around the Caribbean, the water close to the U.S., and then return to Miami. So that eliminates some of the risk associated with, you know, offloading hundreds of passengers into a port community and having them embark again. The other thing that exists here in the Caribbean that is unique is that these companies all have private islands in the Bahamas. What I'm hearing from the companies is that would allow them to allow people to get off in a reduced risk environment.
One domestic port of call that may or may not be on future itineraries is Key West, Florida. Key West voters okayed a series of referenda back in November, which will cut down on how many cruise ship passengers can get off the boats and visit the island, and also the size of the cruise ships. What's at stake here, and what has been the activity of the cruise ship companies in terms of these measures?
It really limits the cruise lines that will be able to come to the more expensive luxury lines. The cruise companies were certainly concerned about this in the lead up to the election and tried their best to defeat the referendums, but voters decided that they wanted to put these caps in place to limit cruise tourism to Key West.
You've investigated how cruise companies were working prior to Election Day against these referenda. What did you find?
We found that cruise companies and the cruise industry donated to political committees that then funneled their money to a nonprofit that funded mailers that included a lot of disinformation to try and sway Key West voters into voting no on the cruise ship limits. The political donation setup is known as a dark money scheme. Because the nonprofit that paid for the political mailers doesn't have to report who donated to it. It just shows that the cruise industry was really hoping to avoid these limits and continue with big ship cruise tourism to Key West.
Taylor, thank you for sharing your reporting with us. Taylor Dalvin is the hospitality tourism reporter for the Miami Herald.
Thanks for having me.
Still ahead, how the pandemic has affected the most popular destination for tourists in the state, Orlando. You're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. We'll be right back.
We're back on the Florida Roundup on this Christmas Day. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, more than 100 million people visited Florida last year, and most of them spent some time in Orlando. But then, of course, COVID-19 hit. Travel restrictions were recommended, and the theme parks closed. At one point in late March, during the height of what is usually spring break travel, 6 out of every 7 hotel rooms in Orlando sat empty. In May, the unemployment in the Orlando area shot up to more than 20%. More than 300,000 jobs disappeared in Central Florida in just a few months. And as the pandemic has worn on this year, some visitors are coming back, but definitely not a lot. Over Thanksgiving, about 2/3 of hotel rooms in and around Orlando were vacant.
I spoke with Matthew Petty of member station WMFE in Orlando. Matthew, welcome back to the Florida Roundup. What's the status of the Orlando theme parks? How open are they?
Well, they are open, Tom, and they have been, since late summer when, with fairly large fanfare, we must say, they did reopen. Disney especially, people were waiting on that one. When they opened, it was with pretty limited capacity. A lot of the social distancing measures that we've seen rolled out across businesses everywhere. Disney, of course, very careful to kind of protect its brand and make sure that it isn't at risk of exposing people, because not only would that be a health disaster, but a public relations disaster. And so far, by and large, we haven't heard of any outbreaks connected to the theme parks. But at this point, they're only operating at 35% capacity where it comes to Disney. One of the things that we've heard from, the mayor of Orange County, Jerry Demings, fairly early on was, and this was in regard to Governor DeSantis basically saying everything should be open for business. Mayor Deming's point was, it doesn't matter if you say that things are going to be open for business, it's going to take a while for people to start coming back. And we're seeing that play out at the theme parks. Although they're open, people haven't been flocking back in the numbers that perhaps the theme park operators and a lot of the tourism industry here in Central Florida would be hoping. So it's open, but things are a little bit quieter than people might have expected.
So we're not seeing those jam-packed parking lots that you would normally.
That's right. I mean, that may change because people seem to just have this COVID fatigue, where they're maybe not taking the precautions they would have earlier on in the pandemic. So it could be that we start to see numbers build at theme parks and other attractions over the winter, notwithstanding where we are in terms of this pandemic. The other thing too is, like, we have the prospect of a vaccine on the horizon, mm-hmm. and the authorities here in Central Florida have been saying, well, look, it's great, and we do know we are going to get these doses, but it's going to take a while to roll that out. So you have to still keep taking the precautions that health authorities have been saying to do. Social distance, wear your mask, don't mingle with people more than absolutely necessary. And it could be that the notion that there is a vaccine coming, you know, causes people to let their guard down a wee bit.
Over the summertime, after Disney reopened, I know the company announced a pretty significant round of layoffs affecting thousands of workers in Central Florida. What's been the impact?
Yeah, I mean, those layoffs were signaled sort of, you know, in September. We're now seeing those layoffs actually take effect across the entire company. Well, when you talk about Disney, at least, it's around sort of 30,000 folks laid off across the entire country. Around about 18,000 in Central Florida, so a pretty big hit to the economy here. Yeah. 11,000 or so are being laid off by the end of December. So, you know, those people, although we'd known that sort of that number was coming, they're actually going to be out of work by the end of the year. And what that means is, you know, there's going to be more pressure on food banks. There's going to be people who aren't going to be able to make rent. We also have, of course, the prospect of the nationwide moratorium on evictions being lifted. That's going to put extra pressure on. When food banks have food drives, you're seeing some people sort of take it into their own hands to try and raise money for the folks in the theme park industry who are out of work. In fact, a couple of Disney bloggers took it on their, you know, under their own auspices to do that, and they've raised, you know, tens of thousands of dollars to do that, which is great, but it's just a drop in the bucket, and it's, you know, it's going to amplify a lot of the problems we already had in Central Florida when it comes to housing, food insecurity, and all those other things.
The October numbers from the state regarding unemployment in the Orlando area, over 100,000 people were unemployed, the unemployment rate at 8%, which was actually, frankly, a tremendous improvement from what it was back in the springtime, certainly. So companies are bringing workers back, and presumably some of those are in that hospitality industry.
Yeah, they are. What, you know, one measure of just how well the hospitality or how poorly the hospitality industry is doing in Central Florida is you look at the tourism development tax, right? Mm-hmm. And the latest numbers, Orange County collected just over $7.7 million in TDT revenue in October. That is the lowest collection since the October, right after the September 11th terrorist attack. So it gives you an indication of just how bad things got. On the positive side, I mean, there's a bit of a silver lining to that. It's, you know, there's been a few straight months, six straight months, in fact, of increases in TDT revenue, but still a long way to go to climb back up to what those numbers would have been. The thing about the economy in Central Florida is, although it's diversified a wee bit, we do have some high tech and some other things going on. You know, it is very hospitality and tourism dependent, and it's going to take a long time for those numbers to come back. And I just come back to that point that Mayor Demings was making about, even if you open things up, people are going to take a while to get their confidence back. Of course, you have the knock-on effect too of people not having jobs, not having extra money in their pocket to spend at the theme parks, because let's face it, a ticket to Disney is going to cost you a pretty penny. So, you know, it's going to take a while for everything to sort of build back to where those numbers were pre-pandemic.
In addition to just the confidence level that other Americans have to get on a plane mm-hmm. and fly into Orlando and to spend, you know, 3, 5, 7 days at a hotel eating out and going to the theme parks.
That's right. It's not just, of course, domestic tourists we rely on here in Central Florida. It's also foreign tourists. And we've heard some noises from Governor DeSantis really wanting to encourage people from overseas, Brazil in particular, mm-hmm. to come back and sort of saying, well, look, we should sort of lift some of the travel restrictions so that we can open the spigot and get the tourists back. But it's a global pandemic. So even if things do start to trend up here in the United States, and let's hope they do fairly soon, but it's going to take a while for the global economy to improve, and we do rely pretty heavily in Central Florida, at least, on that stream of tourists from Europe, from the United Kingdom, from Brazil, and our countries a little bit closer to our shores to kind of stimulate things and keep things kicking along. So it's a little bit hard to see at this point, you know, when things are really going to turn a corner and we'll start to see those numbers coming back, and that industry, that the engine that drives Central Florida, that drives the economy, get going again.
You're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. We're speaking with Matthew Petty from member station WMFE in Orlando about hospitality, the theme parks, COVID-19 in Central Florida, and the continued impact that it has in that community and that economy. Matthew, one of the ripple effects of the tourist development tax cliff that you mentioned is, of course, local governments relying on some of that revenue for different kind of projects. You mentioned the impact with food banks and nonprofits as they try to serve those folks in Central Florida that have been so directly affected by the economic impact of COVID-19. What are some of the knock-on effects with local governments and some of the financial decisions that they're going to have to be facing in the year ahead?
That's a good question, because one thing that governments in Central Florida have been doing is they have been using CARES Act dollars. In some counties, they've been saying, okay, we can actually use some of this money to pay for things like payroll, et cetera, and that frees up money down the track. There's a deadline to that, of course. You've got to spend that money by a certain date to be able to actually use it and have access to it. In Orange County, I mean, just talking specifically about the tourism development tax, they've had to dip into reserves to pay for that shortfall in TDT. And latest count, County Comptroller Phil Diamond said they've used, up until this point, about $88 million in reserves to pay for things that would have come out of TDT revenue. The other thing, too, about TDT is, of course, it's earmarked for tourism-related things. And there have been attempts, you know, in the past to kind of, for people to get their hands on it, or the governments to kind of get their hands on it and spread some of that wealth around. Tourism industry pretty keen to make sure that most of that goes into promoting tourism, which is what it was set up to do. But it is going to be a problem, and I don't know that governments, you know, in Central Florida at least, necessarily have figured out exactly how they're going to navigate the future. I mean, basically the hope is, you know, the sooner we can get vaccines distributed wide scale and the sooner we can get a handle on the pandemic, business is going to start coming back. But it's a bit of a waiting game until that happens.
It is, because there's still consumer confidence and travel confidence that is involved here. Mm-hmm. And bringing it back to the idea of the theme parks, Disney particularly as a leader in this, how is the response to the pandemic, the protocols involved and communication by the theme parks to their audience, how's that been different than, say, for instance, the overall state response that residents have had to deal with?
There's a pretty high level of confidence, I think, in, you know, people who, season ticket holders, that the likes of a company like Disney has things under control. And I talked to a few teachers, for example. This was right around the weekend that Disney reopened the, all of the theme parks started reopening. And they were saying to me that, look, I have, you know, way more faith in my ability to go and spend a day at the theme parks, albeit, you know, most of it's outdoors, and be safe than I do going back into a classroom where I'm going to be stuck inside, you know, with a lot of students, risking exposure to them, exposure from them. So it's a bit difficult to compare an entire state response to a company, although Disney is an enormous company. We have Universal as well. But it does seem that businesses in some situations do have, they've been able to sort of coordinate the response and get that down pretty well. On the other side of that, of course, is the layoffs. And we talked about that earlier, just you know, thousands of people out of work. And who knows when those numbers are going to come back and when a company like Disney is going to be able to hire back all of their employees, or at least, you know, many of those folks who've unfortunately found themselves out of work at this point.
Makes for a very difficult holiday season. Matthew, thanks for sharing your reporting with us here today.
You're welcome.
Matthew Petty with member station WMFE in Orlando.
And that's our show for today. The Florida Roundup is produced by WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Heather Schatz and Denise Royal are the producers.
Jason Zabka is the WLRN Director of Radio Programming, WLRN's Director of Radio Operations. Our technical supervisor is Peter Maritz. Engineering help from Doug Peterson, Charles Michaels, and Josh Torres. Our theme music is provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at AaronLibos.com. Have a great holiday. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. Enjoy your Christmas, and we'll be back next week.